You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello, and welcome to That One Time on Tour. I'd like to thank all you guys out there for checking out episode one. The response was amazing. There was a lot of international listeners and just way more people that cared, I guess, than I thought. So thank you guys once again for checking that out. This is episode two, and I'm very, very excited. I have been working really hard, a lot of late nights. You know, I've got small children. I've got my son is almost two, and my daughter is about 6 months old. So the podcast recording and editing time usually is somewhere around 2 a.m. So I'm going to get it done for you guys, though. This is episode two, and my good friend Gavin Smith sits down with me, and we talk about being on the road together when he was tour managing for the Ataris, when he moved to Indiana to help me with Rock and Roll Summer Camp, and just all kinds of cool stuff like that. So please follow us on all of the social media platforms. It's either slash or at TOTOT podcast. So throw us a like on there, you know, comment on a picture, whatever. And please share all of this on Facebook so all your friends can find it. And make sure you review us in the iTunes store, preferably 5 stars. So once again, here is my conversation with my good pal, Mr. Gavin Smith. Gavin, what's going on, man?
Suez, what's going on, man? Long time no talk.
Long time no talk, man. Yeah, I feel like it's been a really long time, and I wish it hasn't been that long of a time, but it has been.
Too long, man. I used to wake up on your couch for months at a time.
Months at a time. Hopefully this podcast doesn't stick with that theme, because my first guest was Joel Green, and he did the same thing for a while.
I know. I love Joel, man. I miss him.
Joel's a good dude, man. It's kind of cool that you got to know him because you were, you know, living with me, and he got to know all my friends at first before you came because he was living with me.
Yeah, Joel's a good guy, man. I did that Cowboy Angels tour with him, and just drank a lot of sweet tea, and
yeah,
you know, it was a good time.
Sweet tea is where it's at. I mean, you know, Joel is from the South, and I lived in the South for a while, and I was not ready for the amount of sweet tea that is in the South, but
you know, and you know what's wild about Joel is that no matter where you are in the United States, he knows like some underground barbecue place.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And like we'd show up into a random city and he'd be like, hey, man, like, I'm just going to break away for a couple minutes and go get some like brisket. And he'd be like, all right. And it was like that for every city we would go to or any town. He's like, yeah, this place is right down the street. And I don't know. Good times. Strange fact about Joel Green.
Well, I remember I booked that tour for you guys, and I'm pretty sure that a few of the shows were in Tennessee, where I'm sure he knew exactly where to go get barbecue.
Yeah, the best part about that tour was you booked like a bunch of awesome bars and like all these great venues, and I wasn't even old enough to drink or get in.
So what did you do on that tour if you couldn't actually, were you able to, you just sit in the van, or like what did you do?
A little bit of, you know, adventure, or I'd sit in the van, but you got to remember like that tour was cold. I think it was in February of 2010.
I remember getting a call from you guys one night. You guys were in like somewhere north of Nashville, like Greenbrier, Tennessee or somewhere. And they had canceled the show because they had an inch of snow.
Yeah. It was a lot of that. And I remember like a couple of those shows too. Like we'd show up to the one bar and there'd be one person there. I'm like, yeah, we're not waiting here. We're, you know, pack it up.
Well, and the funny thing is, I mean, you know, you're from Pennsylvania. You know, you taught snowboarding for a while. I'm in Indiana. I was in Indiana at that point. Now I'm back in Indiana. So it's like an inch of snow doesn't shut anything down anywhere except in the South.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They panic and they don't drive and it's a state of emergency.
I mean, I've done, you know, full Canadian tours in January. So I don't want to hear anybody gripe about an inch of snow in Tennessee.
Yeah, good point. Good point, man.
So this is That One Time on Tour. This is my new podcast. You are guest number two. So I hope you're excited. That's pretty cool, right?
It's an honor, man. I appreciate you thinking of me.
Well, what I want to do, I mean, you know, of course, eventually I'm going to talk to all kinds of people, but these first few episodes, I really want to kind of dive deep into people that I have, you know, real life experiences with. And, you know, you and I did a lot of touring together. We got to be very close, you know, just like Joel, you came to live with me for a while. For some reason, I was like dragging everybody to Indiana. I don't know why I did that.
No, I think I lived with you. I think it was on and off for, what was it, about 2 years?
2 years, yeah. I mean, you would go back for a while and you'd come back. But I mean, you were there through a lot of, you know, turmoil and different things that happened with the, you know, the Ataris and different bands that I was in. But you were also there for a lot of the good times. And I don't know, I just feel like I want to start. First off, let me start off when we met. So how about you tell me what you remember and like what was going on, and like if you remember the first time we actually hung out, I'd like to hear your take on that.
So I think if I remember, it was 2009 and I was on tour with my band Pull the Pin, but I was actually, my band, it was kind of on and off. I either played guitar or I tour managed. It was like, depending on, you know, if the stars aligned, it was like, I don't know. I played guitar with this band called Pull the Pin for a while and I left the band. And then I started hanging out with those dudes again and just tagging along on tour, and they needed a tour manager. So it was 2009 and they were going out with the Ataris. And
that was us.
Yeah. And I think it was an East Coast run. I think it was New England down the coast to Florida and then and back or something like that.
Well, I know that you guys, we met up with you guys. We were heading out to Bamboozle.
Right.
And then we were going, after we played Bamboozle, which is a really funny story about that, that I'll tell really, really quick. We played Bamboozle. Our drummer at the time, Jake, was super young. Right after we played, or the day before we played Bamboozle, we had the day off. So he flew home, went to his prom, got crowned prom king, and then flew back, played Bamboozle at Giant Stadium. And then at 7 p.m. that evening, we flew to South Africa. So it was kind of crazy couple days.
That was the year too. It was Hoodwinked and you guys were the Misfits.
Yeah, we did the Hoodwinked Festival. We did the Misfits set. And then the next day at Bamboozle, we actually played an Atari set.
Yep, I remember that.
That's cool. But yeah, I remember we met you guys and we did a couple weeks before that happened. And then we met back up with you guys after, after we got back from Africa, because I believe there was still like 6 weeks of the tour or something, at least for us. I know you guys didn't do the entire thing.
No. But I think one of the first conversations that I had with, I think it was by the time we got to like North Carolina. So there were definitely some dates in between where there wasn't a whole lot of communication and it was just,
well, I remember, I mean, you know, you guys were brand new on the tour. It always takes a while to warm up.
Right.
But, and I don't really remember knowing exactly what you were doing because we didn't have a tour manager on that tour.
Well, that was all handled by you.
Yeah. I was doing all the tour managing stuff, like, you know, advancing the shows and figuring out catering and parking and everything. And so, yeah, continue. I don't want to break in on your story.
No, you're good. But I remember towards part of that, because we always would end up at the venue super early just because I'm kind of anal about stuff like that. I like being on time. And, I remember I would, you know, I was your main point of communication, would go back and forth with you, let you know what the deal with catering was and if there were any requests on your part and, you know, any variables for the day, you and I were texting. And then towards the tail end of it, I remember you were like, "Hey man, you know, you're already at the shows super early. Like, I'll pay $25 a show to tune my guitars." And I was, and at the time that was gold because we weren't making a whole lot of money. And
well, I just remembered, you know, I think the package in and of itself, money wise, you guys probably weren't getting your fair share. And you know, you were the only, I mean, I connected with Brad and Rob and all those guys and, you know, Corey, but you were the one that actually, you know, hung out and sat and talked with me. And like, I got to know you pretty much over those next couple of weeks, like as a really good friend.
Yeah.
And I always thought of you kind of as like a little brother. I mean, I hope that's not like derogatory towards you.
No, I appreciate that.
And I like the fact that you might have been kind of green and not really knew what you were doing, but you were eager to learn and you were very, very hardworking. So I was, you know, cause I'd done a lot of tour managing myself outside of playing in bands. And I kind of felt like a mentor, if you will.
No, I mean, keep in mind too, man, I was 19 years old at that time. You know, Jake was 18. I was 19. So I was, you know, I'd graduated high school the year prior. and didn't really want to go to college, and just started tagging along with some friends. And it was a way of being out on tour when I wasn't playing, you know what I mean? And trying to stay involved. And the cool thing through all of that is like Rob, Corey and Brad are some of my best friends on the planet. And anytime there was an opportunity, it was kind of like you, they would give, you know, they'd call me up and be like, "Hey man, we're going out for a couple of days. Do you want to come with?" And I always would, just, you know, for the sake of doing something. And that was a thing that Rob actually dubbed. He's like, "You know, man, you're going to be our tour manager." And I didn't know what the hell a tour manager did. You know what I mean? It was just like, you'd give me a list of like, "Hey man, you're going to advance these shows. You're going to count our money. You're going to make sure everybody's paid and go from there." I was just like, "Sick, let's do this."
Well, yeah. And that was the same kind of way that I was. Like, a lot of the things that led me to being in a couple bigger bands and actually doing a lot of touring, you know, when I wasn't playing, was the fact that if someone ever said, "Hey, do you want to go on tour with us?" I'd say yes. Just always say yes. You never know what it's going to lead to. I mean, you know, I played in Brazil, I played in Underminded, I was in the Ataris. Like, a lot of those opportunities came because I said yes to things that maybe I wouldn't normally have said yes to. Selling merch or guitar teching or tour managing, something like that.
And it was no different for me, because I mean, like a month later, I got a call from you to tour manage you guys for Warped Tour 2009.
So do you remember any like cool stories from the first tour that we did together? Like before you were actually with us as our, like a crew guy?
Any stories from that tour? I mean, that tour, I don't. I'm going to be very honest. I mean, I think it was...
I have an amazing picture of you in Jacksonville asleep in the venue.
Oh, all right. So I do remember. Yeah. So I remember that hurricane. That was at Jacksonville Beach. Yes. Yes. I remember that. And I remember like standing out on the beach and like the Coast Guard was just like yelling. I was like, "What are you doing?" And we were just so excited for it because we thought the show was going to get canceled.
That was a big show too. And I think the thing that helped that show, I mean, we had a good draw, especially Florida was a great market for us. But that show in particular, I think because the weather was so horrible and a lot of the other local businesses had shut down, that we had a massive amount of people there that might not have been there otherwise.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because I remember walking awesome through that venue and it was just massive, man. There's so many people there. No, I remember that you guys are pretty like wide-eyed and like everything was cool and fun, and we were kind of the bitter old guys. But then when I saw you guys having so much fun, I had more fun.
I get it.
I mean, so thank you for that, because I think I enjoyed the tour a lot more. But yeah, so when you actually got the call from me to do Warped Tour with us, which there was a whole process behind that. I mean, you know, I was a champion for you. I wanted you to come out on the road with us because I knew you'd do a really good job. We were doing the Warped Tour, and you know as well as I do, you need somebody to have your back in a situation like that, because that tour is brutal.
I was definitely not ready for Warped Tour.
I don't think any of us were. Plus, we did it in a van, which was probably not the best idea.
No, but you know, I remember the most about that tour. I remember getting a call from you. I was living with my parents at the time, and they were like, "Yeah, go for it, have fun, whatever." And I remember I drove out to your house in Muncie and hung out there for a couple of days, and then we split. But I remember prior, you and Brian asking me, because I'd never done a West Coast tour at that time. I'd never been to Indiana. But you had asked me like, "Hey, have you ever been to St. Louis?" I was like, "No." And you were like, "We're going to show you the arches. And then, well, we're going to Arizona. Have you ever seen the Grand Canyon?"
Oh yeah. The cool thing about that was that whenever we would drive, because Chris was already in Arizona recording, and we were supposed to pick him up and then head out to the Warped Tour dates on the West Coast. And we're going to work our way back east. And we never really, Brian and I always, you know, whenever we'd have to drive somewhere, it was just get there. But we thought if we left early and took our time, we could actually turn it into this cool road trip. And part of, you know, talking Brian and Jake and, you know, everybody in the band into that was the fact that you were coming and you'd never been to those places. I'm like, "Oh, we can just like make this a family vacation before we get to Warped Tour."
Oh, and it was.
We saw all kinds of stuff, man.
I remember that water pump that blew out and you were stuck in Gallup, New Mexico.
You know, I'm wanting to say probably 7-8 years ago, like the last time that I went, that I drove out to San Diego, and I stopped in Gallup and I got a soda at that gas station next to the hotel. And I drove by the little bar. Brian and I walked like 2 miles to this bar because we were so bored. But yeah, we were stuck there for what, like 3 days?
It was a couple days, yeah.
It wasn't a bad place to be. It's kind of Hills Have Eyes kind of vibe.
Oh, it was terrifying. It was literally in the middle of nowhere.
Well, if you remember though, it was like, what, 120 degrees. We're driving down the road in New Mexico and all of a sudden we hear something and it gets really hot in the van and we pull off the side of the road and yeah, we have no water pump.
I hate to be like that negative guy, but like, I feel like from every tour that I've done, I remember all of the breakdowns more than anything.
I think the reason, I mean, I'm the same way back tours all the way back to when I was like 17, 18 years old. I've had a lot of breakdowns, as is anybody that does a lot of touring. And I think those stick in your mind because even though it's negative, you usually get really good stories out of the breakdowns.
Oh yeah. Hands down.
Because I mean, Gallup, New Mexico, nobody knows anything about Gallup, New Mexico, but we spent 3 days there and actually had a pretty good time.
Yeah. We stayed at TA or?
Yeah. We stayed at a TA. I just remember we were waiting that last day. They said it was going to be done. Like the mechanic said it was going to be done. And we're watching Little House on the Prairie on an old big screen TV at the truck stop.
Yep. Yeah. And I remember that.
We met that one guy that like he was hauling horses and like he didn't have any money for gas. So like we gave him some money for gas. He was a super nice guy.
Yeah.
Maybe
I also remember. Do you remember the Petrified Wood Museum and that llama farm?
I do remember that. Yeah. And I remember, what else? Man, there's so many weird things that we did on that trip.
Like I feel like every time we saw some random billboard, we had to stop.
Well, was that one of the times that we stopped, to see the thing? Do you remember that out there in New Mexico?
We were like, and what is the thing? And that's the gimmick.
And yeah. Anybody that's made that trip, you know, out west has seen those billboards. And, you know, for like 100 miles out, it's like the thing, come see the thing, blah, 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 blah. And you get there and it's a little truck stop and you pay your $1 or $2 to go through. And when you get there, it's just like a mummified child or something. Like, it's not what they claim it to be, some crazy thing. It might've been fake. I mean, it's a total roadside gimmick, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I remember we were in Arizona. We were getting gas and I was the last one in the van. I got cornered by like those three dudes. And they were selling PCP or something. And the guy's like, do you want some? And I was like, no. And then you showed up. I was like, Chris. And of course you show up like bald head, skulls tattooed on your neck. Like, leave him alone.
Yeah.
Like my dad there to save the day.
Dude, I've got a lot of stories like that. Actually, there's stories about how I'm sort of an asshole. One time I was on tour. I think this was a Widow Jenkins tour. So it was like Brian and Joel and everybody and Aaron, everybody that was in the Widow Jenkins. It might've been an Atari's tour. I don't remember what it was, but we were coming home. We drove all night. It was like 7 a.m. We were at a truck stop. We probably had like an hour and a half to get home. And, on that tour, nonstop, people had been like bums that had been coming up to me wanting money, you know, wanting cigarettes, whatever. And I was so over it. And I had just woken up in the back of the van and I was walking into this truck stop and this guy goes, hey, can I, excuse me. And I was like, no, I won't give you any fucking money. And he goes, dude, I just wanted to know if you had a jack. I have a flat.
Oh no.
And I felt like such a prick, man. But, Brian and I gave him the jack and helped him change his tire. So I guess I feel better that we actually helped him do that. But
you know what my favorite, part about that tour was that, like in that era. And I know you remember this vividly. This was like when Twitter first came out.
Okay.
And
yeah.
And, my mom had my Twitter. So I was like updating stuff and putting pictures up, and Brian put on Twitter that Jake and I were rolling on ecstasy at the Grand Canyon and blowing on each other's shoulders. And my mom saw it. And was like, I remember she called me freaking out and she's like, I don't know what you think this is. Like,
I totally remember that because I think there was talks about your mom like wanting you to fly home. And
oh yeah, she was just like, yeah, I remember. And we still bring it up.
Like, I
remember,
can't like, believe that your mom like actually likes me after all that.
Hey man, you know what? Like they're super cool about it. Like even during that time frame, because I wasn't going to college and I was going to tour, they were like, hey, if you want to do this, like just, you know, figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what you want to pursue, then that's fine. But you figure it out. And I just remember that phone call. And it wasn't even true. That was the best part.
Well, yeah, it wasn't true. We were at the Grand Canyon. I don't think anybody was rolling on ecstasy.
No, nobody was. It was hilarious. And I just remember being like, Mom, it's not like that.
But you know, it's hilarious that your mom would think that you would put something like that on Twitter as well.
Well, Brian did.
Well, no, but the fact that like
you're rolling so hard that you're actually going to tell the world through social media.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's just funny because, I mean, I was a kid. Like, the thing is, like, a lot of the tours that I did was before I was even old enough to drink.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you were, how old were you when you did the Warped Tour with us?
19.
Yeah, so you were, you couldn't drink at all. I mean, I guess you could drink at the barbecue, but, you know, not legally.
I was a kid. And I mean, and even within the past 4 years, I've done two tours because I work and like life happens. I mean, you know how it is. You're a dad now.
Yeah.
In 2014, Pat and Penny took me to do a UK tour.
I wanted to get into that actually, because I know, was that a headliner or did you guys go over there with somebody else?
No, I mean, they had gone over a bunch of times with Bowling for Soup and really created a name for themselves. When I went over with them, it was a headlining tour and it was with Suburban Legends and this band called The Hype Theory. And it was so fun. I mean, the big rooms, like we were doing the O2 Academies and stuff like that.
Those are great venues, man.
They are, man. And every show with them, they would do VIP sessions for their fans. And it was weird to go over there and see, and this isn't to bash the States by any means, but kids over there still give a shit about music.
Yeah, and I can see that.
You know what I mean? And like, I don't know. I don't probably put as much focus into a show anymore of like getting tickets. Like, oh, if I'm in the area, you know, and there's stuff available, maybe I'll go to a show. And that's pretty lame on my part.
Dude, I'm just wait until you get older. I'm just as lame. And it's not the fact that I have kids. It's like, you know, Lucero was playing a while back and they're one of my favorite bands. I was like, oh, I could totally go see this show. And then I totally forgot about it. And like the day of the show, I had clicked that I was going on Facebook and it reminded me, but I had no way to go.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe a lot of it might be the same for you, but you've done so much touring and you've been around music so much that it has to be something that you almost can't live without seeing to actually go and spend the money.
I'll agree with that. And it's got to be the right band. And
well, like someone asked me the other day, they're like, oh man, they tagged me on something on Facebook. They said, dude, Metallica is coming to Indianapolis. And I was like, yeah, I've seen him 15 times when they were good. So, I mean, no offense. I love that band. That is the band that got me playing guitar. That is like my band, but I'm not going to spend $120 for nosebleed seats at an arena when I've seen them. You know, I saw them with Jason Newsted back in 88. Like I don't need to go see them.
I wasn't even born yet.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, man.
It's wild. But yeah, I mean, and then the last tour that I did was, this past, December, I did a short run. Pat and Penning brought me out again with Simple Plan and Hit the Lights, and did some make updates from the hurricanes that hit down south, like throughout Texas, and you know, some of the weather made its way up to Tennessee. So we did some of those shows that had been canceled on the original run, but it was a good time. I mean, it was still a lot of fun. I love those guys. Every opportunity, I mean, a lot of the bigger tours that I've done were with Pat and Penning, and Rob, of course, from Pat and Penning was in Pull the Pin with me.
Rob also infamously had drums thrown at him when he played in the Ataris.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but
hey man, I'm not talking shit. I'm friends with both guys. It's pretty funny. The one thing
I was at that show in Asbury Park.
The one thing that's funny about that, and like I said, we're not going to talk shit on anybody because it's water under the bridge, but I will say the thing that I was upset about with that is that when that happened,
people thought it was you.
People thought it was me because Chris Rowe, the singer of the Ataris, shout out to Chris. What's going on, man? His name starts with a K. My name is CH. So when that happened, I had a lot of friends that maybe were just stupid. I don't know, but they thought it was me. And I mean, it was on TMZ. It was everywhere. So, and if nobody knows what we're talking about, I'm not going to tell you really what it is. You'll have to just do some hunting.
But, sure.
But yeah, a lot of people thought it was me.
It won't be hard.
Yeah, it won't be hard. people thought it was me and they were like sending me texts and like Facebook messages like, dude, you're such a prick. I'm like, it wasn't me. Like, can you not spell? And plus I haven't been in the band for like 4 years.
I remember though, I was at that show and I remember watching Rob drumming and I was just like, maybe I was intoxicated myself.
Probably.
And I remember being like, damn, he's killing it. And then like, of course, whatever, turn of events, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I remember calling you after and being like, you're never going to believe what just happened. Well, yeah, and that was like 1 o'clock in the morning.
The cool thing was that you called me told me what happened. So like I actually found out about everything before it hit the internet and the shit storm that happened once it hit the internet. But I mean,
because I remember I was one of those things. He called me like the day of. He's like, hey man, we're playing Asbury Park. I live like an hour and a half from there.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, we're playing Asbury Park. If you want to come down and hang out, that'd be great. And then of course Rob was on and off with the Ataris and doing his own touring that I hadn't really at that time. He was touring a lot. And Rob's one of my best friends. So anytime that he was around, I would try to hang out, and you know, he would always, you know, put me on some kind of list and we can go hang out and get dinner or whatever. But yeah, good times.
Yeah. I love how we went totally away from like us hanging out and touring to something that neither one of us really had anything to do with, but was kind of
Oh, that's
funny.
Okay. That's still a great story, but let's we can rewind.
Yeah, we were indirectly involved in that, I guess.
Yeah. So we can let's take it back to 2009, because I have some pretty awesome stories from Warped Tour.
Yeah. So I got a hold of you. I we figured it out. Gavin, we want you to be our tour manager. We're going on Warped Tour. Now, what happened after that?
So I remember, yeah, you took me all of every crazy roadside attraction in America. And then we met up with Chris, who was recording with Bob.
Yeah. Out of Flying Blanket in Mesa.
Yep. And we were kind of, there was some recording going on for, I think, Graveyard of the Atlantic. Is that right?
Yeah, the Chinese Democracy of the punk rock world.
And I remember listening to some demos out there, and it was pretty cool. And then
the studio was amazing, man. We had such a good time that day. We went to the studio and got to see everything and hear it all.
Another thing too. So Joel Green might be the roadside barbecue encyclopedia, but Chris Rowe is the roadside Mexican food encyclopedia.
Can I tell a really quick story? I think you were actually with us when this happened. Maybe it might have been a different tour, but and if Chris hears this, he's gonna laugh too. The best thing Chris Rowe ever said to me, and it made me laugh so much, is we had just pulled into El Paso, Texas, and Chris is like, "Oh man, there's the best taco place here. I've ever had tacos in my entire life." And I'm like, "Well, what's the name of it? We should go get tacos." And he's like, "I can't remember the name of it." He's like, "Get your phone out and Google El Paso tacos." So then I said, "Really? You want me to Google El Paso, Texas and tacos?" It was like 8 million hits. I don't know if anybody else thinks that funny. I just think it's funny. It's like, hey man, I want to find my favorite pizza place in New York City. Put New York City pizza and then Google that.
Good luck.
And shout out Chris, if you're listening, that was hilarious. You might not remember it, but I remember it very fondly.
I remember it. Like we would be, you know, cruising through the Southwest and we'd just take a random exit and you'd be like, there's a great taco stand over here. Like literally stand like in some podunk town. And in an old trailer, and he was right. And it was always like some really good food. So, but I remember, you know, stuff like that. I remember San Francisco Warped Tour 2009.
Oh, great story. I know where you're going with this.
There was if I remember correctly, and I might not because this is 10 years ago, there was like some kind of noise ordinance and the schedule got changed or backed up.
Well, normally, if you're the first band on Warped Tour in most cities, I won't say all cities because you're getting ready to tell the story, but in most cities, if you're the first like opening band, and the schedule changes every day, it could be us one day, Bad Religion the next day, NoFX the next day.
Right.
There's really no headliner on that main stage. It's just kind of the luck of the draw. And that's what's so great about Warped Tour. There's no rock star bullshit, you know? But normally the bands would start, I think, at like 12 or like 12:30. And
that day they start at like 11 or like
10:30 or 11.
And yeah, it was early.
We knew that we were first that day, but we were still at the hotel.
And I remember because I would cruise down there. Usually Jake and I would go down there first and we'd get breakfast. We'd kind of like scope out the area. And I remember Margot was doing merch for us and she was also traveling with
The Scenic.
The Scenic, that's it, yes.
Who were basically our road crew. And they were on the tour playing a small stage, but they didn't get catering or anything. And so I hooked that up too. I was like, hey, if you guys are our crew and like set up our guitars and do all that, the side work, we'll give you guys laminate so you can get food.
I remember that. So we would like check in with Margo and she'd be setting a merch and counting in and stuff like that. So, you know, daily morning stuff, whatever. I remember calling you guys and being like, hey, so you're on and I don't remember the time.
It was like 15 or 20 minutes.
It was not good.
And it was like, you know, like basically in a really busy kind of, It was down.
You're talking San Francisco.
Francisco and the place. It was down there at that pier or wherever where they had Warped Tour, which was close to the bridge that went to Oakland. So it was a busy area.
So I remember like the clock is ticking and I'm panicking and all of a sudden we had the van and Chris had a rental car.
Yeah, Chris had a rental car.
Remember that?
Yeah.
So Chris had his rental car and we were waiting on him and Brian. And I remember he was up on that bridge. Sorry, that was my dog.
What's up?
So I remember running into traffic and them getting out and me sitting in traffic with the car.
Well, that was the thing because we knew that we could run to the stage. Everything was set up. The guitars were there. And that's why I'm glad we had a crew for that tour because everything was ready to go. They even did sound check. So you come and you're like, I'll sit with the car, go. So we just take off as fast as we can. We got there 5 minutes late. We did a full set and everything worked.
Yeah. I remember that vividly. And I just remember sitting in traffic waiting.
I think you parked and got there for like the last song.
If that,
you might've been there all day. I don't know.
It was crazy though. I remember just sitting in traffic, but even so rewind, we were in LA, we're in Pomona. This is days earlier. And I remember you and Chris went out for sushi. You went out for sushi.
Well,
and I
listen, here's what happened. It ended up being going to get sushi, which kind of made some people mad because it was, you know, it was the day before Warped Tour starts where you do like the rehearsal day. And so Chris and I originally were going to go have lunch with Mr. Brett from Epitaph because
Epitaph
had shown interest in putting out the new Atari's record. And we got everything set up and Chris is like, you know, you're doing some business with me, you know, you're kind of handling stuff. So I'd like you and I will go meet with Brett and maybe go to Epitaph and see if it's going to be a deal we want to take or if they're even interested in doing a deal. So we leave and like 5 minutes after we leave, we get a call. Oh, it's off. You know, something came up. We can't go see Brett. We can't go to Epitaph that day. And so Chris is like, well, why don't we just drive to Studio City and get sushi at my favorite sushi place?
No, but I wasn't even going to jump into that. But
I'm being totally transparent on this podcast.
No. The funnier part. I mean, it's not funny, but I remember you calling me and being like, "Dude, I'm stuck. Like, we're stuck in traffic. Like, we're not getting back." And
We were planning on, even though we were going to, you know, hang out with Brett and go to Epitaph or whatever and get food, we were still planning on being at the rehearsal. No,
but do you remember why there was so much traffic and why you couldn't get back?
Yes, I do remember. And I'll tell that story right now because I have some amazing pictures that I'll have to put up with like the show notes from this podcast.
But well, not only that, but like Michael Jackson died that day.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Michael Jackson died and we realized the traffic was worse than normal LA traffic. And we also realized that we were like 2 miles away from the LA Medical Center.
Yeah, where he was.
Where he was. So we got off the freeway and went to the LA Medical Center just to drive around. And like E! Entertainment News was there. And there were people outside with like, you know, dolls of Michael Jackson and signs. And it was the craziest thing I'd ever seen in my entire life. But yeah, I forgot all about that. Michael Jackson died that day. And
I was in a Del Taco. I was like in a Del Taco with Brian and Jake.
I just remember that across the street from our hotel, there was an In-N-Out, which was amazing.
Yes, it sure was.
And you guys also, I don't know if it was that night or the night after that. I think it was that night. Finch was playing a show down
at the Glass House.
At the Glass House.
Yeah.
And you guys all went and saw Finch, and I stayed at the hotel and watched True Blood on my iPod.
Well, that was also, we were out swimming at that pool, and we met the dudes from The Exposed.
We met the guys from The Exposed, yeah.
Who I still, you know, I mean, of course, I mean, they're not a band anymore, but I loosely like hit those guys up on Instagram just to say, hey, how are you?
I'm still friends with those guys on Facebook, too, and I'm pretty sure that they're going to I think maybe Mark's going to be a guest. I haven't really talked to him a lot about it, but I'm going to try to get those guys on here too.
Sim put out an acoustic record and was doing some stuff with Chuck Reagan. And I think he lives in California now, but I remember meeting those dudes because we went with them to that was the Warped Tour. I think that was like the opening party.
Yeah.
With totally. Finch at the Glass House.
It was and then Finch and somebody. Who was the other band? It wasn't just Finch or somebody else.
I don't remember.
But I just remember that I was really into True Blood at that point, and I had the entire first season or second season on my iPod, and I started watching an episode. Then you guys were like, "Let's go see Finch at the Glass House." I'm like, "No, I'm just gonna chill."
Do you remember when we went to Dallas and we pulled up to that hotel and that guy in the wheelchair had two guns on his lap and like greeted us?
I remember that whole thing. Yeah, we were in Dallas. There was something, there was some show that the Gallows or somebody was playing, and like Henry Rollins was supposed to be there. Do you remember that?
I don't.
Well, and I just remember that like we were going to go see Henry, and because I'd spoken to him a couple times, and like he thought it was cool that, you know, in the Boys of Summer, the Atari's Chris changed Deadhead sticker to Black Flag sticker. So that was my in with Henry Rollins. It's like, oh yeah, cool. Let's talk and be best friends. And it didn't really happen. I've invited him to Christmas a couple times, and he always sends me an email back and he goes, hey Chris, thank you very much, but I'm going to be in Southeast Asia. but yeah, I remember like we were at the Motel 6 in Dallas, and we went down to the pool. And Motel 6s are normally kind of sketchy anyway, but this one seemed particularly sketchy. And there was a guy in a wheelchair. And he had two Glocks?
I just remember him greeting us at the van. And
he was a nice guy.
He was super friendly.
Yeah, like
super
friendly. He wanted to hang out and like be our buddy. But I was a little freaked out because he had two guns on his lap.
And that's not an exaggeration. That's not just that's the absolute truth.
Yeah, that's the absolute truth. Like, I remember walking to the pool and he goes, hey, what's up, guys? And we're like, hey, man, what's going on? And I glanced down and I'm like, holy shit. He's got two, pistols in his lap. Like, he's ready to go at any time. Maybe in that part of Dallas, that's just what you do. I have no idea. But
I'm not sure.
That was a unique experience.
Yeah.
I remember at one point we were trying to see if Motel 6 would give us free hotels for life if we all got the logo tattooed on us.
Oh, nice.
Because we stayed in Motel 6s every night. And Chris Rowe had an amazing thing that he figured out. There's a time between the night shift and the day shift where if you get there right in between when it shifts over and you get your room, that you literally get the room for 2 days for the same price. Because it's like, you know, if you get there and you check in at noon and then you have to check out the next day before 11. But if you get there at 4:30 in the morning, then you have it from 4:30 all the way until the next shift. And then you've got it all the way till the next day at 11. So you literally get almost a day and a half for the price of one day.
I remember you would tell me a story, you were in chronic chaos and you would go to a hotel lobby or a Motel 6 or anything, and you'd ask them to see the room first.
They always used to do that. I mean, and that's something that I don't know how we figured it out, but you could I'm not really sure if I want to stay here. Can I see the room? And then we would always, one of us that didn't talk to the people at the front desk would go in the room with us. They would stay back. We'd go give the key back. And then after that, they'd let us back in and we'd shower in the room.
Super clever. I get it, man. I get it. I totally get it.
I mean, we used to go to McDonald's and find receipts in the trash and then go inside and say they messed up our order and they'd give us free food. You got to do what you got to do, you know?
Yeah.
So we did the trip out west. You got to see the Grand Canyon and everything. Your mom freaked out about your Twitter.
It was awesome.
And then, so let's hear some Warp Tour, other than just, the drives and people with guns. How was it for you actually, going every morning and, settling and just figuring stuff out on that tour? Because that is a brutal tour. There's a lot going on.
The thing is though, man, and I've always heard mixed reviews about Warped Tour, and I played in a band when I was a teenager. I was 16 years old, called Nothing Comes Free, and I won a battle of the bands and got to play a date on Warped Tour in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and had grown up going. My dad took me my first year. I think it was 2002 or 2003, when the Ataris were peaking and things were good. But I mean, that's a tour that when you're on it, I remember being super young and Kevin Lyman being super cool. If you ever had any questions, there's no band that was too big or too small for their staff to help out. And I was a prime example because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And I remember going in to fill out paperwork and basically getting our meal passes and going through the meetings early on, because as you know, you have to be at Warped Tour a couple of days prior and it's meetings.
Yeah, there's meetings there's, like I said, the rehearsal and they set up the stages and they figure out all the everything. They have to,
The logistics behind it.
It's a city that they pack up every day and then rebuild every next day.
Right.
I mean, it's insane. The logistics of it is crazy.
And I remember like meeting up with accounting and then being like, oh, these were the arrangements that were made and we need this number and all this other, the legalities behind a band that is actually a business. And I remember calling you and being like, dude, I don't know what the fuck, like they're speaking Spanish as far as I'm concerned. And I remember you walked me through that whole process and made sure that that was good to go, because of course that was something you've been doing for years.
I mean, it's still not easy though. I mean, because when you're in a band like the Ataris or you're in a band like, you know, Chronic Chaos or Pull the Pin or Patent Pending or whatever, you know, you're not always going to be on a huge tour. So some tours are just, you know, cut and dry handshake deals. And then some tours there's insurance and there's tax ID numbers and there's all kinds of crazy stuff.
Exactly. And that was a part of it that I had no idea about, clearly.
Well, you did a good job.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You took a lot of the work away from me. I got that tour was amazing for me. I'm just going to let all the, you know, the 10 listeners that we have that tour. I had someone that set my guitar up and tore it down every day. I had someone that changed the strings and tuned it and cleaned it. I had someone to do all the business and I had someone selling merch. So for that tour, I got to play my show and then do anything I wanted the rest of the time. It was amazing. Yeah.
I remember that tour. Like the cool thing was the Ataris hadn't done Warped Tour in years and the shows were huge. I mean, that was the first time that I had really, I mean, the California dates were insane.
Yeah. I remember in like Pomona, we played right after Under Oath, and that was Under Oath was killing it at that point too.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think we were sandwiched between like Under Oath played, we played, and then Thrice played.
Yep.
So, you know, Under Oath gets done. They came off stage and like, hey, good job, guys. You know, and like, and then nobody left. I thought, I mean, the Ataris had a draw as California. I mean, that's one of the best markets we had. But the fact that like you look out at the sea of 25,000-30,000 people in Pomona for Under Oath and then, oh, nobody left. And
yeah.
I always thought, well, is it maybe they really, really like us or maybe they just didn't want to lose their seat because Thrice was coming up. Because there's always thoughts of that, because then there was one day where we were like sandwiched between NoFX and Bad Religion. And yep. I'm like, oh yeah, this is a huge crowd, but maybe it's because these people were like, it's like an Atari sandwich. They wanted to be here for NoFX and then they wanted to be here for Bad Religion. So, you know, who knows?
I forgot NoFX. Well, I didn't forget that, because the first day I was unloading and Fat Mike was behind me. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning. And he just yelling, he's like, where is Chris? Yeah. He's at the hotel, man.
That's hilarious, man.
But I was like, for what it's worth, I'm a big fan. I'm sure you hear that a lot. And he like gave me a hug and he's just like, thanks, buddy. He, like whispered in my ear.
Well, I remember like we got to hang out quite a bit with the Anti-Flag guys. They were super, super cool. And they actually played that Hoodwink Festival. Would they do The Clash?
They did, yes.
Because I remember they played like right before we did our Misfits set.
Yep.
That's really cool. I haven't thought about Warped Tour in so long. It's so nice to talk to you.
Oh man, I missed you. I got to get out to Indiana. I keep saying that. I say it every year. I think, when was the last time I saw you?
Well, I mean, I just last year moved back from Gulf Shores, Alabama to Indiana, and I don't think I'd seen you the whole time I'd been down there. And no. I lived there for a good 5 years, maybe
I
six.
I did rock and roll summer camp with you.
2010 or 11?
I think it was 11. And then I moved back to Pennsylvania.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm doing rock and roll summer camp again, and I'm going to need somebody to help this summer. So maybe you can come out.
Yeah, let me know. I love that.
I'll let you know. And to our listeners
shred,
that don't know what we're talking about, I do a music summer camp for kids. We put bands together. It's pretty cool. Just check out facebook.com/RNR summer camp if you want to check
these
it out.
Kids, like some of those kids, man, they outplay some adults that I know.
There's some kids kids that I'm teaching now that can outplay me. I might know more about theory, and that's what I'm teaching them. But yeah, these kids, they watch YouTube and they figure out a sweet pit can do all this crazy stuff. And I'm like, man, I have no idea what you're doing.
I remember living with you and going through it. I remember you and, you know, we would always talk about hanging, because you had a studio. The Gallows was on your property.
Yeah, I had a recording studio.
I remember you and I would go out and hang out in your studio and play guitar and track and like come up with song ideas and whatever, not for anything, just for us. And you going in and being like, yeah, do an augmented fifth. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And then you'd go in and like, you basically broke everything down for me over probably the course of 6 months. And you were quizzing me on it like this. And it, I mean, it really helped in the long run. I don't play guitar as often as I'd like, but I mean, it's definitely something to have under your belt. For sure.
Well, that's what I've had kids before that are like, you know, why do I need lessons? I just watch these YouTube videos and I play all this stuff. I'm like, you don't need lessons, but if you ever want to really understand your instrument and really know the building blocks, you know, like learn your intervals, learn your scales, learn, like, that's the stuff that's going to make you a better guitarist. And if I wouldn't have done scales, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day when I was in high school, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now. I mean, I just feel like kids want everything super easy nowadays.
Yeah, they don't want to put the work in, myself included.
Yeah, as I get older, yeah, I want things pretty, you know, immediate. But guitar is a hard instrument, you know. If you want to really do it right, you've got to put the work in. Okay, so we're getting off topic. This is supposed to be about tour. No, this podcast is really about anything that I want it to be about, so it doesn't really matter. But so we did Warped Tour. There was some great times on that tour. I mean, we got to know the guys in Gallows, really, not my recording studio, but the band Gallows, which, you know, we got the Lags played some songs with us, and we got to know Lee, the drummer from Gallows, who is now in a great band called The Funeral Shakes. He is going to be a future guest, so shout out to Lee if he checks this out. That tour was great, man. I mean, I remember Jake got a tattoo from Frank from the Gallows.
yeah, I remember that too.
And I'm trying to think about what else happened. That tour, there was just so much that happened on that tour.
I just remember a lot of, Aiden was on that tour.
Oh, yeah, because Will got up and did Misfits with us.
Well, I remember we were sitting with Will one day at breakfast or something, and his hand was, like, covered in this super bloody rag. We're like, Will, what happened? He's like, I punched the clock on the stage. And then Craig Owens sang a couple times, did a couple shows.
Craig hopefully is gonna be on this show. I've put the word out to him, so we'll see. Craig, nice. If you're listening, shout out. It was great when he got up and did San Dimas with us. That was one of the best days of the tour. I think that happened here in Indiana, actually.
Yes, because Aaron played guitar.
Yeah, my stepbrother Aaron played guitar, and Chris and Craig just kind of were crazy all over the stage. And that was the same day that Will from Aiden did the Misfit stuff. Cause I remember, like, I didn't even realize he was going to do it. And he just jumped in from the side of the stage like a monkey. It was crazy, man.
He would like hide up in the rafters like a vampire, and nobody knew he was there. He would just swoop in and grab a mic.
That was awesome. Yeah. That tour was great, man. I mean, did you, after that tour was over, when did you actually come to live with me? That's what I'm trying to remember, because it's
shortly after. Because that tour ended in June.
Yeah.
And I had hung out in Indiana that winter. And then, so this is, okay, that's the end of 2009. And then 2010 was when I did, you got me that tour with Cowboy Angels, which was Joel Green and Dan and Derek. Derek drummed for like Joe Walsh, didn't he? Or something like.
I'm going to have to fact check that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just a good story. But I remember touring with those guys. You hooked me up with a run with them, and then I think I was actively staying with you throughout that time frame. I was kind of going back and forth to Pennsylvania, but I was living in your spare room and mowing your lawn for rent.
We were trying to start a promo.
Trying to open a studio. We're trying to move your studio.
We're trying to move the studio, and we're trying to open up like a promo, like publicity company with our friend Jeff that just kind of never materialized. There was a lot of big ideas that maybe just got left on the back burner.
I mean, it could have been good. It was a weird time though, man. There was just so much going on, but that's for another podcast.
That's for another podcast. Well, we're hitting close to an hour already, if you can believe that.
Oh, wow.
And I'm trying to cap most of these. I mean, because, you know, the first few episodes, I don't want people to be like, well, a 3-hour episode. So
yeah, no, I hear you.
Is there anything, I mean, that you can remember that just stands out, like a story? It doesn't even have to be with me and involved, just something from your musical career that kind of opened your eyes, or just, you know, either something that made you realize you're doing what you were meant to do, or you're not doing what you were meant to do, anything like that from being on the road?
I don't think any of it clicked or like materialized for me as a career, because I mean, now I work for a software company and I cut hair on the weekends and I kind of have my hand in a couple things. If something presents itself, I try to do my best to kind of step in and make myself available. I think for me at the time, because I was pretty young, the tour that I did with you guys was probably the most mature of a tour that I've ever done. And I mean that just because with Pull the Pin, I mean, you've met those dudes. They want to party. And
yep.
And I just remember, like, with them, it was just a lot of crazy antics. Like one of my memories of touring with Brad was he went through the wall of a hotel, clean through a wall.
Wow.
Like, I think he was like jumping back and forth on the beds. I don't really remember. And he slipped and he went straight through the wall into the bathroom.
Did you guys have to like pay for that, or did you just bail?
I didn't pay for it.
Well, see, and like you've known me a long time, and you know that I'm not really a partier,
right?
Like, I don't really drink hard. I mean, I'm not like straight edge or anything. I mean, I just don't really drink. And
yeah,
so,
there's nothing
like,
wrong with that.
And then, well, the cool thing was, like, in the Ataris, nobody in that band really did a lot of partying, you know?
Right.
We all were kind of geeky, like just would do whatever. We just didn't do a lot of partying. I think that's since changed for a couple of the guys, but back in the day, there wasn't a lot going on. So when we would tour with bands that was kind of their thing, I never really understood it because we didn't tour with Motley Crue. I mean, like if we were touring with bands normally that were smaller than we were, and I didn't want to have to pay for messing stuff up if I was drunk. So I can't imagine like other bands doing that.
Well, the thing is, man, I kind of have to rewind. I don't even think that we were drunk when this happened.
No, it was just like goofing around.
It's just like, I think we were just like, it was probably one of those days where we were like super giddy because we could finally afford a hotel room.
Yeah.
And, you know, like staying at somebody's house is super cool, but it's kind of nice to sleep in your own bed and not on a floor. And I mean, it is what it is. I wouldn't trade any of those times for anything, but I think it was just one of those times where we were just super excited to finally have a hotel room or that we budgeted correctly for once. And, you know,
do you remember there were a couple times we're out of, I don't know if I'm not trying to like sound like a saint or anything, but
you got us hotel rooms.
There were a few times on that tour where I actually out of my own pay got you guys hotel rooms.
Yeah. I remember.
Because I didn't want you guys to have to sleep in the van.
Yeah, I remember that. You did that in Florida for us because it was like one of the hottest days of the year. And you're like, there's no way you're sleeping in a van.
I think it might have been in Gainesville or somewhere. Do you remember that? Somewhere close to Gainesville. It was somewhere in Central Florida. I'm not really sure where. But I just remember there were so many times where, I mean, you guys were getting whatever you were getting paid. I can't remember what it was.
I don't remember.
But there were times where I was just like, I'm not going to let these dudes sleep in their van. Like, we just played a sold out show.
Like, yeah, we had this like, we had a 93 GMC Vandura. And when Rob bought it, there were dead rats all over it, like in it. And he was like, this is perfect. I'll take it. And that thing was home. And it broke down every time we toured in it. We slept in it because there was like a fold down bed. It loosely caught fire. And what I mean by that, we were cruising on the highway the one day and we smelled something burning. We're somewhere in Pennsylvania. We were coming back from Long Island on our way to Cleveland. And we did everything in teams. So it was like Rob and I would drive and, you know, one of us would keep each other awake. And then Brad and Corey, we would switch and, you know, every other tank of gas. I mean, you know how it is. And something was burning. And we pull over to some gas station and the whole van fills up with smoke. And we're like scrambling, like to throw, like, I think he, like, we were still moving and he like slammed it in the park and we're jumping out and Corey's trying to like get his shoes on and Brad like pushes him out the van. The whole thing is like, it's not engulfed, but it's filling up with smoke and we didn't know why. And on the podcast, you talked about your first episode, that guy on tour who like knows how to fix everything.
Yeah. I've always been lucky to have someone like that.
Like for us, that was Anthony from Patent Pending. And we were on tour with them and we called them like, so we didn't know what to do. He's like, here's what you're going to do. You're going to call AAA because they're from Long Island. So it's like thick accent, whatever. And they ended up showing up and helping us. We ended up towing the van back to the Poconos where we were from and jumping in with them. But it's every now and then, because Brad's a beer rep now and he travels a lot. So every time he passes that gas station, we have a group text to this day and we get a picture of that gas station.
That was kind of the same thing with, you probably remember this, every time Brian or myself or Jake would be in Gallup, we'd always send out a group text, Gallup, New Mexico.
I think over the years, I got a couple from myself from you guys.
Yeah.
Good times.
That's awesome. Well, good Gavin, times. I want to say, man, it's been great having you on here. Just like with my first guest with Joel, you know, such a good friend of mine, you are as well. I feel like we could have a part two, a part three, a part four. So,
oh, we definitely could.
I think we're probably going to do a part two. So if you're into,
good
if you're into
me,
that, I'll let you know the details on that and we'll come back.
Yeah. But, keep me in the loop. I'd love to.
Is there anything you'd like to promote? I know you're not on Facebook, but like, do you want to promote your Twitter? Is there anything, you know, anything coming up in the future you're doing musically or otherwise?
Probably not, being honest. I mean, if I could throw a plug out there, I just want to thank, you know, some good friends. Thank you for bringing me out on tours. Thank the dudes in Patent Pending and, you know, for always taking me out and always thinking of me when I needed, you know, jobs or wanted to kind of get my feet wet in touring. So, for me, it was all about who I knew.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how it is for everyone. It's all networking. And like I said earlier, don't say no to stuff.
Yeah.
Just say yes and then figure it out. Right.
You know, and even there's a lot of kids out there too that, I mean, I remember speaking to a lot of kids at Rock and Roll Summer Camp too, that, you know, maybe playing doesn't work for you, but the business side does. And that was definitely, that was true for me.
Yeah. Me too.
You know, I took to the business side of it and happened to like that more. So, I mean, there's so many ways around it to stay involved. Maybe it's tour managing, maybe it's teching, maybe it's booking, whatever it may be. So
we put that emphasis so much in at camp with the kids too, because I tell the kids all the time, if you want a career in music or in the music industry, there are so many like outlets. You don't just have to be in a band. You don't just have to play music. There's so many other things you can do, because I mean, you and I have never technically played in a band together, but we have a history, and I think of you as an equal. Do you know what I'm saying?
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Well, no, dude, you're one of my best friends, and like, you were there when some of the biggest, best stuff happened in my life, man. So thank you so much for being a part of it.
Absolutely, man. Well, you know, hopefully we could do this again, and I got to get out to Indy.
Yeah, you got to come see us, man, and I got to get out there too. I've not been to Pennsylvania in a very long time.
You're not missing much.
You're not missing much in Indiana either. So, well, hey, I want to thank you. I hope to have you back on the podcast soon. And plus, I hope to just talk to you where people aren't listening.
Sounds good, man. I'll hit you up soon.
Okay, man. Love you like a brother. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Love you too, man. Long time. Talk to you soon.
Bye. And there it was, my conversation with Gavin Smith. Thank you guys so much for checking it out. If nothing else, this podcast is a great excuse for me to talk to my friends and have someone listen to it. So thank you guys so much for listening. Next week on episode 3, we're going to have very special guest, Mr. Ty Fury, played guitar in the band Trapped. Yeah, the Headstrong guys. Headstrong, I'll take you on. Those guys. We met back on the Monsters of Rock cruise in 2013. Ty's a great guy, amazing guitarist, and it's going to be a lot of fun to you know, shoot the shit with him. So I can't wait for next week. Like us on all the social medias, TOTOT podcast. Review us in the iTunes store. And thanks again, and I hope you guys are enjoying these. I'm going to keep putting them out. So we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.